Hello, I'm Robin Williams. I've been in love with Betty the Crow for many years, even wrote a book with her name on the cover. But now it seems she has a cousin just as clever, starring on the cover of Nature. Yes, another Corvid genius, another feathered engineer. More news from Pluto as well, and a solution perhaps to our energy problems, famous and disputatious as they are, all in today's Science Show. Dr. Rachel Webster is a professor of physics at the University of Melbourne. In fact, she's a Pro Vice Chancellor, and she's been on the Science Show many times talking about the promise of geothermal power. Always the promise, never the wedding. But the Latrobe Valley could be a bonanza.
The two things that are crucial about geothermal energy is, first of all, the generation of heat, and that's usually through magma being relatively close to the surface or radioactive rocks that might generate heat. But the second thing is the insulation properties of the rock near the surface. So in other words, you can trap heat and therefore enhance the heat content on a particular part of the surface.
It's one of the problems that to get really hot rocks, to get heat coming up, you have to drill down deep.
Yeah, and that's really the crucial thing is how far do you have to go to get the sort of temperatures that might be commercially interesting? The sort of average is about 25 degrees centigrade per kilometre. And if you actually want to generate electricity, then you probably want to be thinking of 150 to 200 degrees centigrade. And so that's a long way down. And our drilling technology is, well, we can just drill that far, but it's extremely expensive. And so what you're looking for is places where the gradient is elevated. And so you can get to those temperatures without drilling quite so far. So I guess we generally talk in terms of 4 kilometres as being the sensible limit in current technology.
It's an awful long way down to go. But what about the Latrobe Valley, where you do have a blanket, which is wet coal of the smelliest kind? What's it like just below that layer?
It's hot just below that layer. So there are parts of the valley where you've got a good half kilometre of brown coal. The brown coal is in fact the best insulation layer, bar none. And so, you know, just below that coal, you're already reaching temperatures about 70 degrees.
Half a kilometre, that's quite good.
Yeah, a little more than half a kilometre, so you're already at 70 C.
And how wide is this patch? Is it extensive?
Yes, it's basically the basin in the Latrobe Valley. And part of the issue that we have is that we haven't yet fully characterised exactly where it's hottest and where it's not, because that requires a combination of drilling and modelling, and we don't yet have the full suite of data.
No, well, we've talked about this over many years and it's taking a bit of a long time. Is it that difficult to case the joint to find out what really is down there, what potential could be?
It's not so much difficult. We have the technology, but it costs money. It's as simple as that. And so to really make an impact in this area is going to require upfront investment, and companies are prepared to invest to a certain level, but typically it's governments that have kicked off this technology around the world. And so it's really going to require the right sort of targeted government investment.
And the payoff would be unlimited electricity for thousands of years.
Oh, well, I'm not sure about thousands of years because we haven't actually run systems for that long. But certainly when these systems are costed up, they're costed on at least a 30-year timescale. So essentially once a generating system is set up, it's expected that it can run for of order 30 years with essentially no capital input beyond the initial startup.
How would you actually get the heat up? Would you squirt water down? I've even heard you say you would squirt down CO2, carbon dioxide, and get rid of it that way.
So the CO2 technology has a lot of attractive chemical and other properties. It hasn't yet been demonstrated at scale. There are a few experiments that have occurred, so it is feasible, but typically water is used.
And the water goes down, does it come back up again so you don't waste it?
Yeah. So these are essentially closed systems because the water will dissolve all sorts of nasties from down below. You don't want to put that out into the environment, so you just essentially recycle the water around. Lots of thought has been given to whether you can use briny water, in other words, water that's not much good for anything else, and so on. There are obvious advantages to that. There are some disadvantages as well. But I think the crucial thing with these sort of systems is that they're still evolving and very much in their infancy. And the sort of technical challenges are actually not so scary. It's just about getting in there and doing it and figuring out the best way and the most efficient way to actually make these systems work.
Well, here's a situation where in the Latrobe Valley, you do have the prospect of closing down a major coal-burning
Correct.
Power station,
Correct.
Which is burning very dirty coal.
Correct.
And we have techniques for converting such power stations from one thing to another. And one could imagine if you've got hot water coming up, so it's a different way of getting hot water, could you not convert that sort of power station to something else?
We have looked at that at times. And in fact, one of the exercises we did early on was to look at actually just bringing the hot water up and using it to preheat the water that went into one stage of the power station. And that was not completely crazy on paper. You know, in other words, instead of taking water at 15°C or something like that, you'd be bringing it up at maybe 100°C. So you're already halfway there, if you like, in terms of heating the water. But by and large, I would say that something like Hazelwood just should be closed down. It's very old technology and the cost of adapting it is just not worthwhile. I mean, one of the other particular points about geothermal, and I think this is really starting to enter thinking around power and energy. I mean, we've been very used to this monolithic generation of our electricity. In other words, one big power station in one location. It is actually much more efficient if you can generate locally. Then you don't have the transmission costs and the transmission losses. You know, this is what we all do with the PV on our roof. If we could store and reuse that, that is the most efficient way to do things. And so when you think about the Latrobe Valley, at the onset, what you would be starting to think about is supplying the Latrobe Valley, right? So they become energy independent. And then you've got the opportunity of thinking about what sort of industry and so on you could start to locate down there. So geothermal was explored a lot over a decade or so in Australia. And I think one of the mistakes that we made was to start to think too big. And I think perhaps what we have to do is to be a little bit smarter and start with small-scale projects that don't cost an arm and a leg, but they'll still cost millions, but not hundreds of millions. Get them working and then, you know, use our smarts to develop the technology from there.
And doing it that way, would that be a model for elsewhere in Australia or even elsewhere in
Absolutely.
Other countries?
Oh, totally, totally. The predictions about the impact of geothermal energy worldwide tend to run around the 5% mark, but it obviously will vary a lot from location to location. And there's opportunities in some locations to go much higher than that. If we develop the expertise and the technology, it can be applied anywhere. There's absolutely no question about that. So I think there's a huge opportunity.
And it won't produce CO2.
It produces no CO2. I mean, you talked about thousands of years. In terms of the actual heat resource, there's no real reason why the heat resources can't persist on very long timescales. But we're starting to enter a grey area there where our lack of knowledge about how these systems work really inhibits us from making extreme statements.
Rachel, my final question and the inevitable one, are there any signs of someone turning up with a checkbook and making it happen?
Well, I think it's actually much more promising today than probably even a couple of years ago. I think the generation of electricity is now on the front of people's minds. You know, the closing down of Hazelwood, the weather events in South Australia have made it apparent that this is something that we need to turn our minds to. I mean, I have for some time been deeply concerned that Victoria has no forward planning on its electricity generation, which is extraordinary. It's been very clear that the resources in the Latrobe Valley have a very finite lifetime. And indeed, as we're seeing, Hazelwood's going to close down. The other power generation facilities down there don't have infinite lifetimes, you know, getting close to the end of their useful lifetimes. And we have no forward plan. I mean, that is extraordinary. So I think the tide is turning. I would be very excited to see a positive response. And I think it probably has to come from government level. But certainly, for example, the universities will come in and back this. And I think communities should be thinking about their own electricity generation instead of just thinking that electricity magically comes from somewhere else. But it's infrastructure that is critical to a community. Birdsville, for example, has their own geothermal electricity generation plant. They're completely independent. Wonderful.
Yesterday, Birdsville, tomorrow, the world. Perth already has small geothermal schemes. That was Professor Rachel Webster, Professor of Physics at the University of Melbourne, where she's a Pro Vice Chancellor. The Science Show on RN.